One thing you all may have gleaned about me after about a year and a half together is that I'm quite artsy and craftsy. I partly get this love of arts and crafts from my time at summer camp, where one can spend these long, languid summer days making friendship bracelets and tie-dyeing. The other parts of camp are appealing too, of course, you know, swimming in the lake, doing the climb tower, doing archery. But there is one part of camp that I am wary of, both as a child and as an adult, and that would be any kind of team sport. Dodgeball, capture the flag, basketball, you name it. A few things are almost guaranteed to occur when you have a team sport at camp. You get a bunch of 9 to 15-year-old boys who sign up, and then almost inevitably, you will have a lot of 9 to 15-year-old boys who are extremely angry, sad, and disappointed after the fact. Cabin mates who were once friends are deeply at odds over accusations of cheating. Younger campers feel somewhat betrayed by older campers who greatly outmatch their physical skill. Many of these animosities do dissolve quite quickly, and others fade with some time, and yet some others become deep-seated for the remainder of these children's time at camp. To me, the core problem seems to be that in each of these games, there must be a winner. With every other activity at camp, there is a built-in sense of togetherness and camaraderie. Archery gets people to cheer each other on. You often find campers helping each other figure out how to make friendship bracelets. And campers regularly encourage each other at the climb tower. There is no winner at friendship bracelets, nor does any one person win the climb tower at another's expense. I feel a brief digression may be in order. I am not, on principle, opposed to team sports. I know I am preaching to a congregation that might be upwards of 50% hockey lovers, or parents of hockey lovers, or just likely has a team sport that they enjoy rooting for. I think team sports are incredibly important for childhood development, and it's particularly important to learn how to lose with grace. However, at camp, unlike with regular team sports, a camper now has to live alongside the group of people who just beat them at dodgeball, which can get, as I've said, oddly personal at times. I think the issue with these scenarios at camp points to a bigger tendency in our society, that we love winning. And I'm taking a broad view of winning here. I would say the feeling of winning can take many forms in our day-to-day lives. Revenge, one-upmanship, smugness, generally getting to feel superior to someone else, are all different kinds of winning. I might point to feeling smug in class when someone else asks a question that was clearly in the reading they did not do. Feels a little like winning. Overhearing a couple fighting on the subway and thinking, I'm sure glad that's not me, seems a little bit like winning. Or even when Carrie Underwood destroyed her cheating boyfriend's car in her hit song Before He Cheats. She definitely won in that scenario. Or better yet, and maybe more locally, the feeling of shoveling out a parking space and then keying someone's car when they park in it. Feels good to win. Though I am sure no one in this room knows anything about that instance of winning. These things may all be justifiable, but that really isn't the point. Sure, it is a natural drive in our culture to want to be the best or to have the best for ourselves and for our loved ones. We enjoy when we are not the butt of the joke or when we did the work that someone else didn't do. And other examples abound of moments where we feel justifiably smug or correctly righteous. However, our gospel has another thing to say about this sort of prevailing attitude. Our gospel story today is actually a continuation of what we read last week. In our reading last week, we get a new vision for the world through Luke's version of the Beatitudes. Blessings for those who are poor, hungry, sad, and hated, and woes to those who are rich, full, well-liked, and laughing. We get a new vision for how the world might be, and this vision continues into this week's reading. In this week's gospel, we get some words about how we might begin to live that vision out in our lives right now. However, it is tempting, but would be a misreading, to think that these instructions we get in today's gospel reading can be treated as some kind of to-do list. It would be a mistake to think that we can complete this list of nice things and then sit back content at a moral life well lived. Sure, these are good things to strive for, but to treat them as a checklist misses the wider point of the teaching, the message that this is a deeper change to our disposition in the world, a disposition that calls us away from this attitude of winning judgment and condemnation. Just as it would be a misreading to think that this is a to-do list, it would be a further misreading to read it as a to-do list by which God will measure us. The clue is right there in the text. We are not merciful, forgiving, and generous because it will make us great people. We are inspired to try and live out these ideals because that is the nature of God, and we are called to emulate that attitude in our own lives. We are called to be merciful because our Father in heaven is merciful. Even so, these are not easy actions to take. It's incredibly difficult to forgive, and it's hard to be incredibly generous with whatever wealth we may or may not have. It is difficult to not return violence for violence or get passive-aggressive for perceived slights. It is difficult to feel okay with not winning. More than a series of difficult actions, it can feel like an overwhelming task to do these things in a world that, day by day, feels increasingly unkind, aggressive, and unforgiving. It's hard to have mercy in a world that oftentimes seems to mock mercy. Back in 1948, C.S. Lewis had a helpful response when asked about a different, daunting, and gigantic facet of life, the newly invented atomic bomb. When asked by someone what they should do, now that society was permanently at risk of destruction from this new and terrible weapon, he says, This is the first point to be made and the first action to be taken is to pull ourselves together. If we are all going to be destroyed by an atomic bomb, let that bomb, when it comes, find us doing sensible and human things, praying, working, teaching, reading, listening to music, bathing the children, playing tennis, chatting to our friends over a pint and a game of darts, not huddled together like frightened sheep and thinking about bombs. Obviously, in today's gospel lesson, we are not talking about atomic bombs. We are talking about showing generosity and being merciful. But I think the advice can still apply. Instead of a world newly beset by the anxieties of the atomic bomb, we must wrestle with how we are supposed to essentially continue to be kind in a world that, where it is easier, encouraged, and sometimes applauded to be unkind. We must struggle not with the atomic bomb, but with the fact that we are encouraged, to use my earlier illustration, in many small and big ways to win in life through so many different means, and often at others' expense. And I think the advice of C.S. Lewis applies in two ways. The first is that we must not gather together to think about the unkindness of the world until it comes knocking on our doors once again. And the second way applies to how we are meant to go about living, and it's the core of our gospel teaching. And I think the answer to this might be quite normal, to do sensible and human things, as he says. Forgive the person who cut you off in traffic. Remember to bring in clothes for the community clothes closet. Chat to your friends over a pint and a game of darts. Do not judge the people on the subway. Pray, teach, and listen to music. The key to living out our gospel from this week that C.S. Lewis illuminates is that in the face of the big harshness of the world, we often can only do the sensible and human things within our own reach. Just as most of us do not have the time and skill to contend with the atomic bomb, we also do not have the time and skill to deconstruct the hostility and meanness of our society. However, each of us has the time and power within our lives to do sensible and human things. So I ask you this week to find a sensible and human way to pull back from the desire to condemn, to find a sensible and human way to forgive those who may need forgiving, to find a sensible and human way in which you can refrain from judgment of others. And we do this not because we strive for perfection. We do this because we seek to be merciful, like our Father in heaven is merciful. We do this because we know our Father in heaven is merciful and full of love. And I preach to you all in the name of the one who loves us first. Amen.